You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to Here District. I'm getting choked up because this guy just means so much to me, Chris. No. You know, because I think the title of our show is like The Fantastic Voyage. And that's an old R&B song, Jim, named by the Lakeside Express. And the drummer for them, Fred Alexander, is my cousin. I got all these cousins. He actually wrote that song. So Fantastic Voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel. Chris is my first mate. I got to say this all the time. This is kind of our little thing here. We're the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a championship at the same school, UCLA, 1995 for Chris, 1975 for me. We are honored to be joined by a guy that, in terms of just historical knowledge of everything Milwaukee Bucks, Jim Paschke. Jim, thanks for being on Here District this afternoon.
Marcus, it's my pleasure. This is the first time I've been on a father and son podcast.
See? Tell that to good karma when it comes to renegotiation time. Yes.
Yeah, nice.
Fantastic voyage.
That's worth a bump in salary alone, right? But fantastic voyage. And we were just chatting just briefly, Jim, off camera. Just this has been one wacky season for the Bucks so far, man. What's your take on everything?
Well, at the beginning of the year, I was very frustrated because I know they're better than what we saw when they were 2-8. And to me, as you and I have talked many times, Marcus, I think, you know, when you have the talent to win a championship, then you have to pay attention to what you're doing every day because it can get away with you and away from you pretty easily. You know, you think you can flip that switch, and I'm not a switch flip guy at all. So I was frustrated with him, and now I'm very happy with what I've seen. The NBA Cup final was awesome. They're playing the way they can. What I'm seeing that I really am impressed with is Giannis Antetokounmpo has now, in my opinion, and by videos I see before and after games, is taking charge and leading this team vocally. And that's something that I don't know if he did. It wasn't his nature when he was younger.
Yeah.
And he had other people that were able to do that a little bit. And I really am impressed with what I'm seeing as he steps forward and takes charge of this team and its future. And I think he understands that its future is this season.
You've been through this so many times. How long were you with the Bucks?
35 seasons.
35. So you've seen it all. You've seen it all. You've seen the greatness come together. You've seen it be pulled apart. I mean, just talk from that perspective.
Well, I think that Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard, I don't know enough about Damian Lillard's situation in Portland and how he had to lead. I know that they didn't get where he probably, you know, where they all wanted to get to, but I don't know how he had to do that every day. But those two players, to me, it's real leadership if you are of that caliber as a human being and a player and can back off that half a peg to let the guy learn to exert himself, because the real leadership has to come from the top. And when I watched Giannis after the NBA Cup victory, everybody was paying attention to him.
Yep.
They were riveted on him.
Yeah.
And that spoke volumes to me. And I know some of those young guys were very happy about the checks they're going to get, but it's more than that. They're paying attention, and he's saying things now. He's reminding them of where they are. And, Marcus, you've heard me say that. You know, you always have to remember where you are and what the job is, not on the horizon today.
Mm, yeah.
And I think they're back to doing that. And I've heard the last few games Giannis saying things that tell me that they are, you know, their horizon is today, knowing what's out in front of them. And, you know, they're not gaining time on winning another championship. So this is a smart play if that's what they're doing.
Well, and I just reading between the lines of some of the stuff Dame was talking about post NBA Cup championship and how special winning something was for him and how many individual accolades he's had all throughout his career and game time moments he's had as an individual player, but they never won squat. And just to be able to win something, you know, and so a lot of times people look at this NBA Cup. I was reading an article today where they talked about it still didn't have the luster of anything special. But, you know, for individual players like a Dame Lillard, you know, and I think for Giannis, I think for this Bucks team where they are right now, this was the perfect storm moment for them to come to Vegas and to beat the number one seed, you know, in the Western Conference the way they did. I think there's a lot of significance, and I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment and read too much into it, but I think this is a stepping stone win that can lead to some good things for this team.
I'm an old guy, and I'm going to boil that down further. I get excited about winning a game,
mm-hmm.
a regular season game.
Yeah.
You know, the cup is great. That's wonderful. You know, but let's get excited about winning tomorrow night. And my whole thing was, and this is based on last season, I didn't think the Bucks ever established enough victories against the right teams spread out over the course of a season that made them a threat in the minds of the other players in the league.
Mm.
And I think you have to identify certain situations. Okay, guys, we need this one. We can't let Indiana beat us five times because guess what? They're going to beat us four out of five.
Yes, sir.
Right? Yeah, you can't do that. And those are the recognition factors that I notice that have to be dealt with. And, you know, you just have to assert yourself systematically across an 82-game season and let the rest of the league know what you're going to do when the time comes. Make sense?
Absolutely.
So you're a believer in quality wins in terms of just not only for your respect, but for the opponents that you are – because you're right. I mean, I was looking at the Indiana thing last year like, okay, come playoff time. Now, you know – No.
They didn't put any fear into Indiana. You have to have the mentality, I'm going to put some fear into you. You're not going to think you're going to beat us. If you beat us, you're going to have to really beat us.
Yeah.
And that did not happen before the playoff series with the Pacers, in my opinion.
Yeah. Don't come in here thinking you got our number.
Right. And so to me, it's a fight, a toughness, a ferociousness that you apply when you feel it. I mean, I guess I'm saying you don't do it every night because it's hard to do that. You physically and mentally can't do that. So take a moment and identify situations where it would be beneficial to be nasty and win.
Yeah, like at Cleveland coming up
on Friday.
As of this recording, in a couple of days, as of this recording.
Right. Exactly. And then enjoy that victory as much as you enjoy the NBA Cup victory, and let's go to work here.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I sound like an old guy because I am an old guy, but what is this about if it's not about that?
Mm.
Now, 100% compliance, 100% success on that, impossible. It's just a matter of repetitions and how you get yourself ready to go and identifying times when it's a little more important perhaps than it is at other times.
Yeah, they did
that.
You
have to pace yourself mentally just like you have to pace yourself physically. And, you know, and I think that's what Giannis is starting to do. I'm starting to feel like, you know, he's reminding them of some of those thought patterns that lead to victories. I like it. I think it's great. And it's wonderful to see. P.J. Tucker did that in, you know, the championship season. He reminded them where they were many times, you know, visually, physically, you know, verbally. And you need players like that. And if that player now is Giannis, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah. And Chris, you know, from the mouth of babes come jewels, but from the mouth of old guys like Jim, we get some pretty, pretty solid jewels also. And one of the things, Jim, I mean, he's told me so many great, great things in terms of just great basketball insight. But I can remember, I think, Jim, it was before the championship. It was a Budenholzer team. Maybe it was the championship year. But your thing was they got to decide who they want to be. You know, what kind of team, you know, what kind of team do they want to be? you know,
yeah, you just explained what it took me 5 minutes to say in one sentence, and that's exactly what it is. And then I think you have to do that repeatedly over the course of a season if you're serious, and again, recognizing, you know, when you need to be reminded, because everyone needs to be reminded. We all do. If we can't remind ourselves, we need our teammates to do that for us.
Just that statement alone, there's parameters, right? There's limitations. I mean, you can only be what you have the capability of being based on personnel, talent, coaching, all that. I mean, but if you're not reaching that limit, that potential, it's like painfully obvious to those of us that are kind of watching, especially on a day-to-day basis.
Well, Marcus, if the world thinks you're a championship caliber team, shouldn't you think that?
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
And shouldn't you be mindful of that? And shouldn't you be focused on that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not difficult in concept. It might be difficult in practice, but you can do it. It's just a matter of thinking it through. I'm a mind guy, you know. What are we doing here? Why are we here today? You know, and when things get out of whack a little bit, bring it back. And you do that with thinking about it and talking about it.
Yeah, and for me, the last thing on this, for me, to that kind of summed up your point, Jim, about this Bucks team is the way they came out in the third quarter against Oklahoma City. You know, came out punching, came out not, you know, keeping their foot on the gas, you know, not letting them back in the game. And then that entire quarter, though, it was just answers for every single run Oklahoma City had. That's when you start to see the mentality of a championship team kind of form. Like, we're not accepting any letdown. We're coming out. We're putting you guys away. You're on the ropes, and we're going to put you away.
14 points allowed in that quarter. They were playing on both ends of the floor with a purpose. You know, I've one thing about this team, when they win in 21, that year when they won games, they were happy. Are they happy after they win, or are they happy and then they win? I'm not sure about that, but when they're smiling and they're playing well,
Wait, repeat that. Break that down again.
Okay, I said, when they won the championship, they had smiles on their faces a lot of times during that season,
right?
And they were playing well during that process. Were they smiling because they were winning, or were they winning because they were smiling?
you go chicken or egg. Go chicken or
exactly.
egg on us, huh?
Okay. I love it.
Exactly. But if I'm on that team, I bring that up and I say, hey, guys, when we win, we smile, and when we smile, we win. So what do you think we should do tonight?
Smile, baby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But so that reminds me. Go ahead. Go, Jeff. You finish. Finish your point.
Well, I was just going to say, and we've seen a lot of times since 21 when they're not smiling at all.
Yeah.
And so somebody's got to go back and say, hey, when we won this whole thing, we were having fun. We were wrestling in the corridor before the game. We were, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What's going, you know, how do we rekindle that? What do we do? You know, can we? Should we? You know, it's leadership.
Yeah. And so that gets,
and recognition.
Yeah, and recognition. But so then, Chris, let me drag you into this conversation based on your personal experience. Because I remember I was working, Jim, doing radio with the great Chris Roberts for UCLA 95, the championship year for the Bruins. But Chris would tell me different stories about the mindset of the team. And I remember, Chris, one breakfast where freshman Toby Bailey was reading the LA Times newspaper about his accolades, and Ed O'Bannon, the senior leader, kind of like Giannis, walks in and slaps the paper out of his hands. Jim is like, you know, we ain't got time for that. We got business to take care of. But Chris, talk about just the importance of that alpha dog. You know, we were talking about that last night, Chris, in terms of basketball parlance, but that alpha dog and the ways that he can assert himself.
Well, it's just it's leading by example. It's you see your top guy, the alpha dog, behaving in a certain way, so you're going to try to mimic those behaviors. For me and our team, it was Ed O'Bannon. For this Bucks team, it's Giannis, right? So you see guys going above and beyond because Giannis is going above and beyond, like Dame. My thing with Dame is what I've, like, his, the biggest difference is he's become a serious scrapper on defense. He's passing up a lot of long shots to get in the lane, draw some contact, you know, make an extra pass. I mean, these are real, like, tangible items that he is sacrificing of his game for the greater good of the team. And I think a lot of it has to do with just Giannis's presence rubbing off on not only Dame, but everybody else on the squad as well.
Yeah, and let me tell you something, Jim. Let me let you in on a secret. I'm really envious of you because a lot of reasons, a lot better looking than I am. But Giannis,
facts.
But Giannis likes you so much more than he likes me, Jim. but I say that not in a deprecating way for myself, but just your relationship with Giannis was special, Mr. Jim, and you had some great stories. Just talk about that in terms of the Bucks leader and your past, your experiences, and you're watching him. I just watched him grow from, I think it was 19 going on 20 when I got here, and that's been remarkable. But for you, probably even more so because you predated those years.
You know, I've thought a lot about this because I can't really explain it. But what I've come up with for myself is we simply got to know each other, Marcus.
Mm.
This is an 18-year-old
wow.
kid from a Nigerian family born in Greece. And I was, you know, an old guy from Minnesota. How does that happen?
You're old then, too? You're old back then? I'm just kidding. Go start.
No, I was.
Okay.
I thought I was.
No.
But, you know, we did one interview a year, and then I'd see him every day, and, you know, hey, Giannis, how you doing, whatever. And, you know, when his father passed away, I sat down for a couple of minutes and talked to him because my father passed away at essentially the same age as Charles did. And so, you know, I shared that with Giannis and kind of explained, you know, what he's going to feel and you know, how it's going to go and, you know, is helping his mother and all of this and stuff. And it was the same deal. We had a family of four boys, and my dad died at 51. So I could share that with him. But other than that, we simply got to know each other. And to me, there's a great lesson in that. I mean, I'm proud of the interviews we did and all the things that came out of it, but I'm most proud of the fact that we simply took the time to get to know each other.
Yeah.
And there was I've never had that with any other player because I honestly tried to avoid those kinds of close relationships because it gets in the way of the job we have to do. You know, I can't be criticizing or even pointing out failures of friends of mine if I'm that close to them. So I always kept the buffer. And I'll say this, Marcus, when you were in Milwaukee and I was at Channel 6 covering the Bucks on a sports basis, not doing the games, you know, I always kept a distance because I noticed other people in the media trying to get close to players, and I'm thinking, man, how do these guys deal with that many people trying to do that? I'm going to be different here, and you know, I'm going to do my job, but I'm not going to infringe on your privacy, your time, and so that's I did not get to know players when I had that job. In fact, I was thinking about this. The first time I felt like I got to know you was when you walked in to audition for the analyst job when we worked together.
Right.
You know, we were at the Mecca, and you walked in, and I'm going, oh, holy cow, that's Marcus Johnson. And, you know, I had talked to you a few times, but it was just a business deal. And then, you know, and I think we connect with people when we're willing to do something for them and on their behalf. And when you walked in that day, I knew what you had done in Seattle with Kevin Calabro, and I knew how good you were at this craft. So my immediate job and thought was just make it easy. Make it easy. And, you know, when you walked in, I knew you were going to get the job, by the way. Not because I was told that. I just knew that because you were perfect for it. And my job that day was to just stay out of the way and help you be you by staying out of the way. So when you give me credit, it's hard for me to accept because of how I feel about you. But, you know, I've kind of gone in a circle here, but I think you and I developed our relationship from that audition day through today in much the same way that Giannis and I have. You know, our talks before the game, we talked about everything. We talked about basketball, of course, but we talked about things going on in the world. And
yes.
You know what, Marcus, we simply got to know each other.
Yeah, and that's what I missed too. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, but to me, there's, you know, for anybody who's listening and wants to change the world, getting to know somebody, especially maybe who doesn't look like you, is a pretty good answer.
Taking the time.
You know, and there's respect there. I think in sports there's respect because that's what sports is,
yeah.
And you have to have it. So that's inherent in getting to know somebody in our environment.
Right.
But I think it works. I think it works outside of that. So, yeah, you know, thanks for asking the question about Giannis. It's been just an incredible relationship. I've never had anything like that with a player, a current player in my career, and I'm very thankful for that.
Well, hey, Chris, so while we're like traipsing down this mutual admiration society pathway here, so I'm doing sports talk radio in Los Angeles, CBS Sports, and we're trying to cut into Dan ESPN. What's the guy's name?
Patrick.
Dan Patrick.
Dan Patrick.
Trying to cut into their time, so they come on at 6 a.m. So our brilliant producers have us coming on at 5:45 a.m. Jim, we're gonna get grab his audience. Which we never did, of course. But it was a grind talking about different sports and horse racing and NASCAR and all that good stuff. So I got the call from the Bucks about an opening as a color analyst, and my immediate knee jerk reaction, Chris, Jim, was like, "It's no way in hell I'm going back to Milwaukee. I ain't been there in 30 years. It's too cold. I'm in L.A." Oh, it just wasn't on the radar. I just had no desire to go back to Milwaukee at that point in my life, you know, 10, 11 years ago. So I come to Milwaukee and they asked me to come out to do an audition tape with Jim.
Sure.
I was like, okay, just see how it feels. Okay. All right. So I take a red eye flight after doing a broadcast in LA. I get in early in the morning. I'm staying at the Hyatt. I go over to George Webb's Greasy Spoon. The cook behind the counter is like, "Marcus Johnson, we haven't seen you in 20, 30 years, baby. Can I call my parents? They loved you. Can they come down and get an autograph?" I'm like, yeah, sure. No problem. Parents come down, whatever. I'm like, okay, it's nice to be remembered. I get to the Bradley Center. And it was a Bradley or Mecca, whatever it was. I get to the
one. It was the Mecca.
It was the Mecca. Yeah. I would get there, but they have some workmen that are sweeping up and cleaning up, a bunch of workmen, 15, 20 workmen all over the place. And I walk in, Jim, and I'm headed to where Jim is set up, up in the stands, a little table with the monitor and microphones, and a bunch of workers are like, "Marcus Johnson." And I always thought Jim, looking back on it, Peter Fagan might have arranged this, but, "Marcus Johnson, baby, we ain't seen you in 30 years. You coming home? I'm like, I don't know, baby, I don't know. And so I sat down with Jim. We did this great audition experience together, put on a Bucks game, and we just were riffing and whatever the word is. We were just going, and it was just and I say all that just to say that it turned out to be, man, from something that I didn't want to do, Jim, from something that I had a bunch of hesitancy about getting back into Milwaukee and the whole Milwaukee, it turned out to be the greatest blessing. The greatest blessing in my professional life without question, and even my personal life. And it's just reconnecting with the community of Milwaukee, connecting with you, this Bucks organization that has treated me like a friggin' king, and you know, it's something to be being a big fish in a small pond. You know, to go to Carnivore and get a great table at the last minute. "Oh, Mr. Johnson, sure, yeah, we got you." You know, all that good stuff, and that's not what it's about, but you get what I'm saying. But it's really I get real sentimental, Chris, just thinking about it. And then Jim. And talk about this, and for us to win a championship.
And your last year.
Did you expect? I mean, did you see that coming? Did you see that coming, or how did that happen for you? How'd you experience that?
Well, first of all, when your dad walked in for the audition, I got chills. I mean, I watched him walk toward us, and that's Marcus Johnson. No. I'm serious, and it was like it was wonderful,
Legend.
And. So the championship year, I felt during our broadcast early in the season, I started to feel that this team had a chance. And we talked about that. I remember saying on the air that, you know, this could be the year. Did I think it would happen? You can't think it would happen. But the possibility was certainly there. And I had a pretty good idea at that point that, I mean, since I had talked to the Bucks about it, they had an inkling that I was going to retire after that season. So the bow that the team and the organization tied on my career by winning the championship in 21 was just unbelievable. I mean, just absolutely crazy. You know, and I made the statement when we handed out the rings. I said to all the young people in the organization, We don't work for these. We work for the possibility of one of these.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a champion. I had the privilege of contributing a little bit to a championship organization. The players and coaches are the champions. And so it was very special, and couldn't have happened in a better way for me.
Yeah. And Jim, I don't think it could have happened. I got to be careful with this without Jason Kidd. And that, I think my first year, the Bucks weren't going to the playoffs that year. And Jason Kidd had the premonition, the idea, whatever it was, to put the ball in Giannis' hands after the All-Star break. The team was not going to make the playoffs anyway. And that was the true eye-opener for me. And I knew Giannis had great potential, but that stretch of games after the All-Star break, he had like 5 triple-doubles, averaged almost 8 assists a game. I mean, he just – and I remember Jason telling the story about because of his size, Jason, at 6'3", 6'4", not – really being able to relate to what Giannis was seeing. So he would stand on a chair as he was instructing Giannis about how, you know, what situations, options to take advantage of. But Jason wanted to get a vantage point from Giannis. And I mean, how do you look at that in terms of Giannis's growth trajectory in terms of the trajectory of greatness that he's been on?
Well, I think in Greece, Giannis did handle the ball a lot, and, you know, I don't know if he was, quote, a point guard. When he came to the NBA, we were just getting into positionless basketball anyway, so there's that. But and you always taught me and remind me of that. You know, the game is different than it was when you played it. There aren't really positions anymore. But I don't believe that Jason Kidd ever intended for Giannis to be a point guard. I think that he understood that Giannis hadn't been playing basketball for a very long time and at a very high level, and that his understanding of the game would be accelerated greatly by having the ball in his hands.
Yes.
And with his height, the point Jason made to me was he sees the game from essentially 7 feet up. He said, as you pointed out, he could not do that. He saw it from the ground level. And so he said the game looks different from above, so let's give him the ball and see what he can do with his knowledge of the game from above. And I think that was just a very brilliant move. And with no disrespect at all to Mike Budenholzer and what he did here in changing the culture, when the Bucks won the championship, I did send a quick text to Jason Kidd and said, your fingerprints are on this one.
Wow. Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did he respond? Did he get back to you?
Yeah, I mean, he said thank you. But, I mean, it's pretty obvious for those of us who were watching both situations that is what happened. And, maybe I was out of line for doing that. I hope not. But to me, it should not go unnoticed. And that's a private moment between Jason and me. But And I suspect that Coach Budenholzer would appreciate that as well, because he inherited what Jason Kidd had fostered in Giannis. So it all comes together and ends up in a pretty good place.
Well, it's no different than, you know, Steve Kerr and Mark Jackson. And what he started. And I'll even go back further to Don Chaney in Houston, and then turning it over to Rudy Tomjanovich. And then you give credit to the coaches that take it to that next level. But
of course.
But you also give credit to the coaches that kind of nurtured and took the guys when they were younger and hadn't won anything and gave them that confidence. And going back to Giannis and confidence, Jim, and you touched on it too, just in terms of him speaking up. I mean, it's just remarkable to me. And on and off the court. I mean, a father of three, married. You know, just the international spokesperson, superstar, role model, all that good stuff. I mean, his father, Charles, man, would be so proud of just kind of where he is now. And he's only 30 years old.
Right, right.
That's the crazy part. Two-time MVP.
You know, I've wondered after Charles passed and after my father passed, I went through this myself. And, you know, and Brett Favre, as an example, lost his father. And that's a significant thing.
Yes.
In your life when you're in the field of performance, because they're kind of your touchstone.
Yeah.
You know, they were there and they guided you, and you had that to go back, and you had that not to embarrass. And so your life changes, and you have to become a different person quickly. And I think Giannis has handled that very well. And it's not ever, in my opinion, a smooth transition, because it can't be. It's not intended to be. But when you look at start to finish on that particular part of his life, I think he's done a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And that's to his father's credit.
Yeah. And
Giannis's credit.
Yeah, but without getting too deep into the woods on it, man, or the weeds or whatever it is, but you know, my dad died March 5th, 2002, Jim. I got sober April 15th, 2002. It was like a definite connection between the two. It's like, okay, well, dad's gone. Well, the resentments and all the, you know, he blamed, he did, he, oh, you know, it was time to move on and be a man and you know, just you know what I mean? Just clean myself up and get headed in a positive direction that he would have wanted for me, as opposed to trying to be this rebel kid that was always going to do the opposite of, you know. So I don't know. I don't want to get too far down.
No, that's excellent, because you remember everything he told you now, don't you?
Yeah. Oh.
And the universe is always working, and I believe it's usually working in our favor if we're paying attention and listening. I really believe that. Again, I'm a thought guy. Are you thinking about what's going on in your life? Are you aware of what's going on in your own life? Are you aware of your own branding? Are you learning what you need to do to be a success? And, you know, boy, I could take this in a really strange direction right here, but
let's go, buddy.
In sport, well, I'll say it this way. In sport, I'm a big believer in meritocracy, a colorblind meritocracy, Marcus, and in sport, you have that. You have a team-oriented, colorblind meritocracy, and you know what? It works pretty darn well when you look at it in total, and there are lessons there that all of us can learn from. You know, let's cut out this crap, and let's work together, and, you know, it works so much better together than it does by yourself. You can do it alone, but it's a lot tougher, and you know, you have to earn what you get, and that's the message. And don't ever tell anybody they're stuck where they are. Teach them how to earn what they get, and they will. And they will. Some of them will. Most of them will.
They have to have
opportunity.
Where does Doc Rivers fit into all this, Jim? I mean, in your mind, I mean, just in terms of his you know, reputation and the success he's had as a coach, the failures that he's had as a coach. I mean, where does he fit into all this?
Well, going back to if this team changed overnight, I suspect he had something to do with it. And I think he might be the guy. If something really difficult had to be dealt with, I think he's a guy who could do that probably pretty easily in his own mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And therefore effectively. I think he's fearless. I would suspect that he's fearless when it comes to doing the right thing.
Right.
And you know what? If you're on the side of doing the right thing, lay it out there.
Yeah.
When you have to, right?
Yeah.
Life is nurturing and you know, totally nurturing. And, you know, men can nurture men. We can all nurture each other. It just, there's no cutoff there. And that's the beauty of sport to me, is we see it all the time. And we see people who accept it and prosper, people who reject it and fail. Mm. It's right there in front of you if you're paying attention to it.
Yes, it is.
Final thought, Jim. The Bucks this season, and I'm not asking you to make a prediction, but just what does your gut tell you? Does your gut tell you anything about this team at this point, or is it still too early to make an informative kind of a judgment in that area?
You know, my gut's telling me if they play the way they've played over the last month and the way they played in the Emirates Cup, you know, they're going to have another trophy to play with at the end.
Hey, wow. Okay.
Okay. I mean, they just beat the top team in the Western Conference with relative ease.
Without Chris Middleton, just spanked it without.
Kenny Smith said something last week that I thought was really, really brilliant. He said, you know, the Bucks can beat anybody in a one-game situation. Right. He said, now let's talk about seven games. And I thought that was very astute, and now the team has to start thinking about that. Okay, How do we do that? How do we beat somebody four times out of seven? And what do we need to do that? And, you know, it's tougher to put the team together when you're at the monetary levels this team is at, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I don't see why, if they appear to be where they are right now, that they couldn't challenge for another championship.
All right. You heard it here first, Jim Paschke. It's from your lips to God's ears or whatever, however it goes. But I'm right there with you, man. And let's hope this fantastic voyage ends just that way, man. But, Jim, we thank you so much, man, for coming by here, District, man. And as always, great insights on basketball, on life. And that's why I love working with you. The time we had to spend together, man, some of the most enjoyable of my professional career. And thanks for spending the time with us.
My pleasure. This is what you and I did very often. And, Chris, it was wonderful to have you as part of this. Thanks for having me.
All right,
thanks,
Jim.
Appreciate you.
It started with a prediction.
We'll go out there and play basketball and win.
And how many games?
Six.
It became the culture.
Chance of Bucks in six.
Being a Bucks fan means you live and breathe Bucks in six. Brandon Jennings created the prophecy. Tune into Behind the Bucks, the story of Brandon Jennings on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Available now on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
That's for the culture.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus Audio production.
All right, first of all, I want to thank the great Jim Paschke and Chris for stopping by. And you've been interacting with Jim quite a bit over these last 10 years we've worked together. Just,
sure.
Man,
great.
And he talked about it, man, just our conversations about life. And you saw what he did. I mean, he was able to integrate basketball mentality, mindset, emotions, you know, the psychic energy into life type situations. And that's what I love about Jim. And that's why I think he's one of the most accomplished broadcasters out there in the business, man. I enjoyed working with him, and we thank him for coming by. But
Legend.
Right now, it's about that action, Chris. It's about that action. It's NBA Cup edition about that action. And this is where we kind of look at some videotape. We get a chance to look back at that championship game between the Bucks and Oklahoma City. So let's throw out some numbers, Chris. They're probably fresher in your mind than they are in mine because I'm a lot older than you. But for Oklahoma City, how many points they score?
81.
God. And you had a great stat. That is what
I believe it's the second lowest scoring output in the NBA this year. The Clippers, I believe, scored 80. And so now Oklahoma City with 81. Yeah, you got to check that.
But well, you're usually pretty good at that stuff. Yeah, it sounds good. Sounds good enough. So, yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, we'll roll with that.
This Bucks locking up, though.
But also, the Bucks scored under 100. Oklahoma City was 11-0 when it held teams under 100 points.
And it was also Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's worst field goal shooting night of the season.
8 for 24.
Him and Jalen Williams combined 16 for 44. What a job. And if you, MJ, quickly on the Bucks' intensity, effort, everybody, the sacrifice. When you sacrifice offensive game to expend energy on defense, that's when everyone is on the same page, in my opinion. And the Bucks did that to bring home an in-season title, baby.
Well, and you know, when the Lakers won it last year, a lot of people were poo-pooing it and all that. But
because it's LeBron, obviously.
Well, yeah, but in the context of where the Bucks are, 2-8 start, where they're 12-3 currently, to waltz their way through the in-season tournament for the NBA Cup, to spank the vaunted Oklahoma City Thunder, number one seed in the West. The third youngest team in the league, blah, 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 blah. Youngest team ever to be a number one seed in NBA history last year.
No Chet.
Yeah, but God dang it. Yeah. I mean,
no Chet.
Well, no Chris Middleton.
More so, no Chet.
I don't know,
that's
man.
That's a bigger deal. That's a bigger deal for Oklahoma City.
I don't think
that it is for Chris.
Maybe right now, but
100%.
But will it be a bigger deal?
It's not an argument.
Will it be a bigger deal come June?
We'll see.
You know, if Chris is up and running and dropping 17-19 and doing this Chris Middleton thing, I get your point. I agree with your point. Chet was playing really good basketball, correct?
High level.
He was playing really, I don't know his numbers, but I just know.
He was giving it to Wimby and all these dudes, okay?
Chet Chet was doing it like that?
Please. Chet was giving it to all these centers in the Western Conference, bro.
What's he got, a hip injury? What's going on?
Something bad. A couple months.
It reminds me, my second year in the league, Chris, I missed some games toward the end of the season because I had this hip problem that was reoccurring, and we could never put our fingers on it. And then, so I'd miss a game. I'd play two or three games, hang out with Lloyd Walton, Ernie Grunfeld, and the guys, get sore again, miss a game, you know, two games, come back and play. And Don Nelson thought I was faking it and all that, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
And then, but I come to find out that the reason for this hip injury that I was having, the soreness in my hip, there was a dance at that time called The Rock. We just swayed back and forth. You just swayed your hips back and forth. And I was doing too much rocking back in those days, Chris.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. that would aggravate that hip injury.
I'm sure it did, MJ. Where are we going?
Too much rocking, man.
That's a metaphor. The Rock was a metaphor, guys. don't let that go over your head, fellas.
Yeah, we was rocking a little bit too much back in those days. But anyway, we digress. Let's talk about first of all, the defense. So we talked about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
yep,
who works out with a good friend of ours out in Los Angeles, Old and Simplest, the Guard Whisperer.
The Guard Whisperer, who
also worked out with Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley worked out with him the last couple of summers, and Evan Mobley gives him a lot of credit for his development as an offensive player. He's worked with Victor Oladipo. He's worked with Spencer Dinwiddie.
He's had his first really big
client. And he's worked out with, you know, my daughter Shiloh, my son Cyrus. So he's really good, really good at what he does. And for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on an MVP trajectory, 30 points a game, to have that defensive blanket put over him the way Andre Jackson Jr. did, I think speaks volumes to the importance of Andre Jackson Jr. On this basketball team, Ajax.
And the thing about Ajax and what he did with Shai is it was the wear down factor over the course of the entire game. So having the energy to pick up full these, you know, basic nondescript inbound plays and Shai having to work the ball up the floor, it eventually takes its toll. And then the Bucks as a unit, the perimeter defenders as a unit, did a magnificent job of trying to fight over the top of every single screen. A.J. Green led the charge. He was amazing. You go back and watch his defensive effort against Oklahoma City. That dude literally was fighting over every single screening opportunity. He made it through Dame, Gary Trent Jr., Torian Prince. Everybody made it an effort to not fight over and then run guys off. And that wore down Oklahoma City. They took a lot of shots. They missed a lot of shots. I think something like 3 for 25 from three or something sick. But a lot of that had to do with the efforts of the Bucks defenders. One more thing on the defense before we roll some tape. Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
Okay. Brook Lopez. So when Oklahoma City's coming down and transition and guys are scrambling to pick up folks, Brook had no problem stopping the ball. Whoever it was, it's a quick adjustment, a quick pickup. And so now you don't have like the breakdowns on the back end on defense because Brook is stopping that first line.
Yeah. And you don't have this team that leads the league in drives. You know, this is in terms of driving the ball to the hole, this team is it. And it just kind of off topic, but on topic. I mean, it's Jalen Williams, man. I like him. I mean, he didn't have a great.
Yeah, he's interesting. His speed, his push. Yeah, that one play was unbelievable. There's one play that blew me away. He got up the floor in like three or four dribbles and finished like full speed and like just falling down. Yeah. Like that was crazy.
Yeah, after a made free throw or something too. Yeah,
and his wingspan is pretty abnormal as well. So he's one of these long arm dudes.
Yeah.
Got a brother, Cody, plays for Utah. That's pretty doggone good himself. I don't know if you know that top 10 pick last year out of Colorado.
Wow.
But the Williamses are those dudes. No, top 10. Yeah, his brother, Cody, top 10. Last year out of Colorado. Yep.
Okay, so let's look at some of this defense that we're talking about. We're going to have Dylan roll the tape here. And I don't really, there's not going to be a whole lot of stoppage. It's just watching Andre Jackson Jr. just hound and harass. Watch, see, there he is, far left of our screen. Just face guarding. Face guarding Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Will not let him touch the ball. Great defensive possession. Watch Andre Jackson Jr. You got to force him into a back cut. Deny, deny, deny. Here's a back cut. Who's there to help? There's your boy Brook Lopez picking him up, forces a turnover. That's just another great job of just denial, disrupting defense. And then finally, picking up full court. You know, all you ballers out there know how that kind of wears on you mentally. He gets it on the move right there. Andre Jackson Jr., a little push. I'm bumping. I'm not going to allow him to catch. I'm right there. I'm going to turn him. He tries to go left, tries to go right. I slow him down, make him have to really work extremely hard. And here's what happens as we stop it there. Stop it there. Here's what happens. All of a sudden now, it gets you out of rhythm in terms of it becomes a mano-a-mano battle. You know what I mean? Speech now, all of a sudden, okay, this you know, second year player out of UConn, I'm averaging 30, I'm MVP. I got to show young boy who's the boss out here. So now you start taking shots a little bit out of character, and not so much that's out of character for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but you could see that he had his rhythm disrupted. And that was because of Andre Jackson Jr. And I think we got this last play in here that was the result of all this going on. Now you got Isaiah Hartenstein pissed off at Andre Jackson Jr. because of his perceived physical play against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So now you got your teammates stepping in. You know, you're in their heads. You're living rent-free space in the head of the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think a lot of that had to do with that.
Let me ask you this. If someone on the court comes at you with his finger wagging in your face, is that supposed to incite some fear into your heart? Someone like a principal coming at you, hey, man, get your hand out. Don't be roughing up our guys. Does that scare you at all?
Yeah, well, let's hold off on this. Let's not hold on. You see that little push? That's a great, great job of finding that edit, Dylan. I mean, and look at him, jab at him, moving his feet, all up in his face, close out, contest.
It's a lot of those over the course of the game that contributed to Alexander's 8-for-24. Yeah. Andre Jackson speeding him up, forcing him into quick shots, and then. Just like defense is contagious when guys are moving on one end, well, offense becomes contagious too when guys are getting up these quick jumpers. Oklahoma City took so many quick shots, and a lot of it had to do with Andre Jackson speeding up the ball at the point of attack.
Yeah, and you talked about just how pathetic they were from the three-point line. Not a great three-point shooting team anyway, but
still, though.
Yeah, but the Bucks were able to really, I thought, disrupt them, get into their heads, And this is my feeling going in was people asking me, the Bucks got a chance to beat Oklahoma City. I think they were like a 6-point underdog or whatever it was the Bucks were. And I'm like, you know, as long as the Bucks rely on the championship medal of Giannis, of Brooke, of Bobby Portis, of guys that have been, Patrick Connaughton played some minutes last night. I thought Chris Middleton would play. He was a late scratch because of the flu. But you've got guys that know how to win big games. They've been there before. Oklahoma City, they're still a young team figuring things out, and I think this will help them in terms of what they aspire to be in 4 or 5 months from now. But I really felt like comfortable that the Bucks would have enough to rattle them enough to throw them off their game. And Doc, I'm sure his coaches, that was a big part of their conversation. But we got to speed them up. We got to rattle them. We got to keep them playing out of their comfort zone and into a little bit more hero ball. But just a great, great win. And then so now that's the defensive stuff. Anything else on defense you want to talk about?
No, we're good.
I think the Bucks are finding out who they are.
Yeah, they're figuring it out. They know who they are. Their identity is being established.
Identity being established. Okay, so that's that. So now we're going to queue up this next set of plays about that action on the Here District. And this is what I love. Dame Lillard's assist, Chris, and just the way that he is looking to become more of a facilitator. Ball moves around. Now watch Dame here. Jab, jab, jab. But just a great find across his body to Brook Lopez. I mean, the way – you know, that's a difficult pass, and that's a difficult pass for Dame. Going left is not his strength in terms of completing those kinds of passes.
It's also a mindset that we're seeing from Dame Lillard that has changed, shifted, and has made the Bucks a much better offensive unit. Dame no longer is taking that first jab fake into a 2-dribble step back or a quick pump step back like he was doing when it was 2-8. He's now getting downhill, getting to the second line of the defense, drawing. He's sacrificing his body. He's going. Dame has been banged up. If you watch some of the hits Dame has to take when he goes inside, it's a lot. Yeah. And so that's why a lot of it has to do with why he settled a lot. But now he's sacrificing here. Watch. And the vision on this play to find Brooke. I mean, golly, amazing.
And that's one of the big differences between today's NBA. I often talk about this on the broadcast. And when I played, it's just the ability to back in those days, we'd say leave that shooter open in the corner because that offensive player won't find him. That's just a too difficult of a pass to make. But now guys can make that pass. We take a look at the second play. Here's another example of that. Here's Dame Lillard once again. Great job penetrating and gets it to the gut of the defense. Derry Bird, A.J. Green, nice job kind of sliding up into the break line to get himself open. Let's take a look at that one more time. But again, it's Dame not forcing things. I got five orange shirts around me. Somebody's got to be open. And fortunately, it's one of the top five three-point shooters in the league, and A.J. Green, Derry Bird coming through. But once again, but it's Dame Lillard, Chris, just facilitating. And I think that's the big difference with this Bucks team. The last 15 games, 12-3, Dame Lillard is starting to settle. And to your point about all the beating and the physical abuse that he has taken, I think Dame has realized that he's not getting that call. He's not getting that whistle like he's used to getting when he was shooting 10 free throws a game, any kind of contact and a little scream, put him on the line. Now referees are ignoring that. And so now you've got to adjust your game based on how the officials are not calling certain fouls. And I think Dame is doing a masterful job of that.
And shout out to the Bucks shooters, man. Guys have really been knocking down big shots. When I say it, like they've been knocking down shots, we all know that. But it's just the type of threes that guys are hitting, the answers that are taking place. Every time Oklahoma City seemed like they were going on a run, someone stepped up. I mean, you had four Bucks with at least two three-pointers. I think three guys had three yesterday. Every quarter, if you go back and watch, every quarter it was a different guy knocking down shots. In the fourth, Gary Trent Jr. came up huge. I think the third, it was a combination of guys. But it's just the shot. But man, because I remember 2-8 when none of this stuff was going in. Literally, none of these shots were going in. And now the guys are hitting them. The Bucks look like a completely different team.
Well, last 15 games, Bucks number one effective field goal percentage. But to your point, a great stat that I read over the last 15, there's only two guys on the Bucks shooting lower than 38 or 39%. On the three-point line, that's Chris and Giannis. And Chris just kind of coming back. He's around 25%. Giannis, of course, that's not nowhere near a part of his game shooting that three ball. But everybody else, Chris, is up around 38, 39. And Torian Prince at 51.
That's
AJ Green, top five in the league at three-point shooting. So that's been a big, big bonus in terms of how this Bobby Portis, you know, the way Bobby Portis has come on and some of the things that he has done out there, the way he's shooting the basketball, I mean, huge. And we've been waiting for these guys to come around, Gary Trent Jr. and Bobby Portis and guys like that. And it's just great to see it kind of play out the way it has. And a big reason why the Bucks are 12-3. Final play about that action. And this is on a miss, but this is, to me, kind of a key. They ain't giving it up. He's giving it up early. Almost gets the hockey assist. AJ misses that. But you see the way he looked up. He got it up to Gary Trent Jr., and he didn't have to make the play that led directly to the basket. He realized that he could get the Thunder into a scatter situation, a two-on-one that you're looking for. You see Dort, he's the one defender going against Gary Trent the second, going against A.J. Green. But just to give it up like that, see that two-on-one, here it comes, here's the pass, there's your two-on-one. And that's all you could ask for. And the fact that A.J. missed that is beside the point, but it just speaks to Dame's mindset now. You know, before he would have backed it out, look to try and handle, push it up the court himself, kind of peruse, kind of see what he had. Yeah. But now it's about, you know, keeping that pill popping, moving the basketball, hitting the open man.
Yeah, Dame getting off the ball has been one of the biggest developments in the Bucks' offensive flow and the improvement in the Bucks' offensive flow over the last 15 games. The willingness to get off of that thing, man, and get somebody an open look.
Yeah, man, so it's all good stuff. So it's got to continue. It's got to continue. The Bucks, as we wind out 2024, they've got some competitive games coming up, and all of them are competitive in terms of if you're not ready to play, any of these teams can embarrass you. But I mean, you got to love the way where this team is right now, and I think Chris winning in Las Vegas, winning the NBA Cup, as much as people might try and downplay that, the significance of that in the context of where this team was, how they played since that 2-8 start. And then the culmination of winning that championship, I think could be huge in terms of just their morale and their feeling about each other and feeling good about what they've been doing, and to be rewarded for the hard work that they put in since that 2-8 start, man. I think it's a great thing. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. So listen, man, that's it. That's it here, District. Thanks again, the great Jim Paschke, about that action. Dylan Hunter Carter for putting that together. Our producer, Mona's Khan, always for hooking everything up, man. And, man, it's been a fantastic voyage. And we're just, what, how many games are we into the season? Like 25 games?
Ask Giannis. He knows.
You know, we still got a long, a lot of open seas yet to peruse. So we'll be right there with you the whole way. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson. Here, District. We'll see you next time.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production. Thank you.